CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. We gotta come up with another name for this thing, man. It's too dry. Like, I know my people in the office are like, no, it needs to be Basketball Podcast for SEO. But we gotta come up with some sort of name on it. And I'm not using Pick and Troll because that was our former colleagues. Like, I'm not doing it. I'm just flat out not gonna do it. So we gotta come up with another name for this podcast. Anyway, this is the CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Moore. You can find me on Twitter at MattMooreCBS, or if you enjoy pictures of my dog and me being very upset that Warriors fans penchant for just saying that Russell Westbrook, who's a top five player in the world, is trash, you can check me out at HP Basketball. Joining me is James Herbert, NBA writer for CBSSports.com. You can find him at Outside the NBA. It is Wednesday afternoon when we're recording it. It's about 3 o'clock Eastern time. I slept through shoot-around because I did not know it was happening. They did not have shoot-around in Oakland. And so I just thought that they were just not doing shoot-around for the finals. And I was mad about that. But then I was like, oh, hey, I could just, like, chill tomorrow. So I slept, like, 13 hours. So I have lots of thoughts in my head. We're going to do a podcast that's not talking about the finals. We talked about the finals yesterday. You should check that out. We'll do a podcast tomorrow talking about Game 3 and probably looking at, you know, what that's going to mean for both teams. And no matter the outcome, but today we're going to focus on some non-final stuff. So we're going to just kind of bounce around the league a little bit and talk about some news and talk about some stories and talk about the draft a little bit. And we'll just kind of bounce around. So I'll start with this, James.
Matt,
what feelings do you have on LaVar Ball and Lonzo Ball? Like, I haven't really talked about it. Like, what do you think about the whole Lonzo LaVar thing? And we won't go deep on LaVar. I know the listeners are probably burnt out on him, but I just want to get James' thoughts quick.
I think it's telling that we've barely talked about Lonzo as a player on this show.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing that's been really lost here. I mean, not among draft picks. Like, there have been plenty of conversations about what kind of prospect he is. But I think when it comes to the headline game and most television shows and whatever, like, we're not talking about how special of a player he could be. And I don't know that he's necessarily going to become a superstar or anything like that. But I think, like, when you watch him, you don't see players like him all too often. You don't see players with his sort of feel for the game and his instincts and his brain and his passing ability all that often. And I think the conversation often has been reduced to, well, like, how is his father going to affect him, and how will him being in the news affect him, and what are the Lakers going to do about him? And those are valid conversations to have. And then the other thing is, like, the jump shot, will that translate? And I think, to me, we don't know if LaVar is going to keep making all these appearances on television shows once Lonzo is actually in the NBA and continuing to, like, make these statements that then his son has to answer for, maybe. We don't know if he's going to be able to get his shot off that easily in the NBA, especially as a rookie, or if he'll have to tweak some things. But I think regardless of all that, like, this guy is going to matter for whatever team drafts him next season as a playmaker, as a passer, as a facilitator. And I think he can fit on pretty much any of the teams near the top of the draft. I think, like, just as a prospect, if you removed the talking points, then most people would be really, really excited about him. I just, like, I love him as a player.
Yeah, I think the general consensus is I haven't found a reporter that's talked to a GM or an executive. There have been some reports from some outlets on record. I don't buy them, but, like, there have been some that have said there's an issue with the Lakers. I don't think so. I think if you talk to almost anyone that's plugged in and you hear from anyone that's plugged in, they all say the same thing, which is the orgs don't feel that LaVar is going to be a problem. And so that conversation is kind of dead to me. Like, the question of whether you should draft LaVar or not is kind of dead at this point, because teams are
But even you just said it. You said whether you should draft LaVar.
Yeah, like,
we're not drafting LaVar here. We're drafting Lonzo.
I mean, you are. Like, he comes. He's part of the package, in my opinion. Whether you should draft Lonzo and the problems that come with LaVar or not, teams are going to do it. You know, he's not falling further than four, I wouldn't think.
I don't think he's falling further than two. Like, I don't.
I'll say this. I mean, I wouldn't be. I think if you asked me to do a mock today, which I got to start working on, I would have Lonzo too. It makes a lot of sense, and I don't have any issue with that. From the minute that the lottery was confirmed, I started hearing, this is from people that are not with the Lakers, so I don't have any, I don't know anybody with the Lakers. But I've started hearing from people that are like, I'm not entirely convinced that they're going to take him. They're like, they could, it's just not set in stone. Like, they really like Josh Jackson. Like, they really like Jackson. They think very highly of him. So it wouldn't, I wouldn't be surprised either way. If they take Lonzo on draft night, I'm not going to be like, wow, they did it. I mean, well, yeah, they took Lonzo.
No, and, that's,
if they, and if they don't take him, I'm going to be like, hey, they thought somebody, I'm not going to be like, oh, they were scared of LeVar. It's going to be like, oh, they thought somebody was better. You know, whoever it is. Like, and we're in that weird range where a bunch of teams and a bunch of their, of guys' agents are jockeying to kind of get their guy in the mix. And that's fine. It's part of the process. I'm with you in that I have kind of felt like it was a two-person race. Like, to me, I look at the talent and there's a very big gap. Like, there's Markel and then a decent gap. And then there's Lonzo. And then there's a bigger gap. And then there's a bunch of other guys. And I wouldn't even put Josh Jackson at the top of that list because I'm not huge on him. But...
Well, I mean, I don't even think... I think it's always hard to know that at this point. Like, every draft we look back and there's, like, somebody that was drafted, like, eighth or ninth. Not every draft, but a lot of them. Like, if in 5 years we're saying Jonathan Isaac is better than Lonzo Ball, I'm not going to be like, oh, my God, how did that happen? Like, I don't think there's this huge drop-off after two. But I think based on, like, potential, I think there's a pretty obvious number one here that's false. And then, like, based on everything that we've been hearing about the Lakers, like, I would just be – I'd be surprised if it wasn't Ball. And I'm not saying that should be the obvious pick. And I think the – we should talk about D'Angelo Russell because I think those guys can play together. I think the fit will be all right. But I also think, like, we need to – like, the big question here, the big variable is how the Lakers feel about D'Angelo after two seasons. And where they think his potential will lead him. And if do they really think their partnership for the next 10 years or whatever is going to be great between the two of those guys if they draft Ball? Or if they'll take him and then figure it out later. I don't know. But I think he makes sense there. I still personally think pretty highly of Russell. Like, I think he's done really well, and it's just been kind of lost in all the drama with the Lakers and drama from his rookie year with the whole Nick Young thing. But on the court, I continue to believe he has star potential. He's not a star yet by any means. But that kind of thing fascinates me.
Talking to some people, I've kind of come under the impression that, you know, the thing with Nick Young is not inconsiderable. Just because guys still remember that, and that impacts, like, how you are with teammates. Now, everybody kind of acted good with him last year, so maybe that's just overblown.
I mean, he and Young got along last year.
On the surface, yeah. On the court. And, like, the thing is, like, I think they can all be, you can be a professional, and you're taught to be a professional, and it'll probably be fine. I guess here's part of it is, if you believe that D'Angelo Russell was 100% your point guard of the future, and, like, he was going to have the ball the most, and he was going to be your guy.
Yeah.
Would your approach to Ball be different? Or would you just be like, we'll figure it out? Like, let's say it didn't seem like they could fit together. Would you still be like, well, he's best player, we're going to go ahead and take him? Or would you be like, I don't want to kind of impugn, I don't want to create a thing with D'Angelo, let's go ahead and just take Jackson? And this is where the best player available thing comes in, and I'm terrible at this, because, like, I can't get my brain to separate context. Like, this has always been a thing with me, where no matter what, I always look at the team's context of where they are in their process, what their roster looks like, where they're going, where they think they're going, what they're trying to do. Like, that stuff all matters to me, and yet you're kind of not supposed to, because you're just supposed to be like, nope, best player available.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where the sort of internet conversation went years ago, was like, look at all these teams that screwed up by drafting for fit. You just need to take the best player and then figure it out. But I don't think that should be the ironclad rule. I think it's about, like, is there a huge difference between the guy you have second and third on your big board? If there is a huge difference and you think, yeah, maybe the third guy would be a better fit, but the guy that's second, just we like him so much more as a player, then you take the guy that's second and you figure it out. But if it's close, then of course you have to consider those factors. And I think in the Lakers case, it's like pretty interesting because if you look up and down their roster, like they have prospects at most positions, right? Like they have Ingram. They have Julius Randle, Larry Nance. They have Jordan Clarkson. They have D'Angelo Russell. And it's like, all right, so like you're not going to spend this pick on a center because there's just no centers that are that good.
Right.
And then the rest of it, it's going to be somewhat duplicative. I think there's an argument that if you take a wing, whoever it is, well, you know, you can just play them and Ingram together, which maybe, but I don't know that I would consider like Jackson a shooting guard either.
You can't play. You can't play Randall at five. You know that. You can't play the T-Rex at five. And if you put, if you put Ingram at four, he's going to get bodied out of existence.
At least in the next couple of years, yeah. So like I think you can potentially play Nance at five.
Yeah.
I don't think you can play Randall at five.
So like somebody's coming off the bench, you know, like somebody in that situation is coming off the bench. It'll be interesting to see.
So it's tricky.
Yeah, it's interesting. It really is interesting. I want to talk Sixers real quick. So yesterday came out, Brian Colangelo's kind of like, yeah, we're kind of interested in trading the third pick, which most of the GMs that are not in the top two are going to say that. Like, we're open to making a trade. The Athletic had a weird piece talking about how they said that it was more likely that Jimmy Butler gets sent to Philadelphia than Boston. I thought that was interesting, right? So if you're the Colangelos and you already have Jonathan, you already have Ben Simmons, and you already have Joel Embiid, if they were to pull off a draft night trade of Jimmy Butler, because that was the other report, is the Bulls are like, we're going to see what's on draft night with Butler. Like, they're back to this again. You know, like Dwayne Wade's opting in, and they're still like, well, let's see what we can get for Jimmy Butler. So if you've got the number three pick in this draft, that's pretty good. Like, that's a pretty good pick to get for Jimmy Butler, right?
Yeah.
And if we combine that with the rumors about Kyle Lowry at least being interested, he met with DeMar DeRozan last week, and the most likely scenario is that Kyle Lowry returns to Toronto. That is the point-blank most likely scenario. It is somewhere above, I would put it at like 70%, that he goes back to Toronto. You might go 90, and I wouldn't argue with it. But it's interesting to think about, like, what if they got Kyle Lowry and Jimmy Butler and then had Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid? That's kind of interesting. Like, that's
the Eastern Conference champion Philadelphia 76ers.
Well, I said that
next season.
I said that yesterday. I kind of cracked a joke, and I was like, that's a really good team that loses in five to the Cavs. Like, that's a really good team that the Cavaliers beat in five. Note on yesterday's podcast, I made a big conversation with you about how Kevin Love was not widely regarded when he was traded to the Cavaliers in 2014. Kevin Love was number five in our EOB Elite 100 that season. So I was objectively wrong. I was objectively wrong on where Kevin Love was considered at that point, as those rankings do include my own evaluation, which I do not have a copy of. I can probably go track it down in my Google Docs somewhere.
Well, I tracked it down last night as soon as you tweeted it. I went and looked at our rankings. There's some great rankings there, which I don't know if you want to talk about now. But
No. I'm going to need whiskey if we're going to do that conversation. So, but –
I'd like you to hold on. I want you to guess which one of us ranked Al Horford ninth in the NBA.
I don't even remember who was on staff at that point.
It was me and Zach.
It was me. Had to have been me.
Yeah, it was you.
Yeah, I don't regret that. Al Horford in Atlanta was amazing. He was incredible. He was so good in Atlanta. Like, he played for, I thought that was a really good team for years and years and years in Atlanta.
You think he's worse now?
No, he had his best season this year. He had his best, okay. he had a career.
But I remember you saying you didn't think he played good defense this year and all that stuff.
I mean, he wasn't as good defensively. Because what I learned this year is that Al Horford is an amazing defender if you have good support around you. And if you do not have good support around you, you tend to not be that, he's, at this age, he's not as good. I think if you had 2014 Horford, he's probably better in that area. He's better offensively with Boston. He got really singled out defensively on a lot of switches. this year in Boston. I say that, like, I watch a lot of, like, I'm willing to back that up. Like, I watch a lot of video to be able to support that conclusion. Like, I feel confident in that assertion to be able to say that.
I can credit you. You were the only one that had Draymond Green in the top 100. However, you also had David Lee in, like, the upper half of yours, and I had him in, like, 98th out of 100 or whatever.
I always had it. See, but here's the thing. Is like, I think you're too hard on him. Like, David Lee was a good
I'm player. Just saying I saw it coming. I'm going to call this one.
He's a post-up player that doesn't shoot threes. Of course he was in your back 50 has to be entirely just be big men that don't shoot threes. That has to be your entire back 50. You hate post-up players. Like,
I had big men that don't shoot threes that play defense, like, very high. I usually do.
I liked it. Part of it's just like, defense. Part of it's just like, I like David Lee. Like, I just, one, he's like a good dude. Two, I thought he really worked hard. Like, I wanted good things for him in that 2012-2013 season. I felt really bad when, I feel bad for the guy because, you know, for as much as I feel bad for any NBA player that makes millions of dollars and gets to play basketball and be doted on by everyone in his life.
Hey, he got a ring and he contributed in that finals.
Right, and like he,
it's true.
But like he was really excited to make the playoffs. Like I talked to him in 2012 for a feature, and he was so excited to be a part of a playoff team. And then he gets hurt in the first game in 2013. And then not only does he get hurt, but then Draymond becomes Draymond because of that moment. Like he goes down, and Draymond takes over that game. And that was like the start of Draymond's rise to really being like, oh, he's got to play full-time starter power forward minutes, like center minutes. Like that
but was, still wasn't Golden State's plan going into the season, though. I know. That's the weird thing. It's like Lee had to get hurt again.
I know. Because David Lee was really good. He really was. He gets a bad break. So anyway, cleared up being wrong on that. So back to the Sixers. Like,
oh, yeah, the Sixers. Right.
That's a really good team.
I mean, that's an awesome team. I'd love to watch that team.
Well, I don't know how realistic it is. Would you be mad because that's Brian Colangelo not going with the process? Like, he's not being patient. He's going after star players. But he's also not giving up a whole lot, right? Like, they don't – you know, would you rather have Josh Jackson or Jimmy Butler, you know?
You have to – at this point, like, the process is over. Like, yeah. Hinkie is gone. This is a different thing. It's not about the longest view in the room. It's not about just – waiting and tanking more seasons. Like, they're going to try to make splashes in free agency. We know that. They've been very direct about that. I would say Hinkie probably would have too at some point. We just don't know when. It might have been this summer too. Like, they're the same rumors about Lowry might be happening if Hinkie was there. I don't know. But I do think, yeah, if you can go get Jimmy Butler, sure. Why not? It's not like he's like 33 years old and past his prime. Like, this isn't in his prime Jimmy Butler on a bargain contract for a star. It still has a couple years on it. So if that's an option, you explore it.
If you're the Bulls and they offer like the three Jahlil Okafor and filler.
I mean, Okafor doesn't really do anything for me, but I guess he's a hometown kid. Maybe you think you can salvage that.
I mean, I think it'd be interesting. I think the idea of like what Jahlil could be in two more years is still interesting.
It's still interesting. My expectations are very low.
Yeah.
At this point, if he does the Nurkic thing, that would be amazing.
Right.
But my expectations are pretty low. So if it was me, I would look for that pick. Honestly, I would try to get that Lakers pick too, but I don't know if that's possible.
Yeah, I think that's too much. I think for where the Sixers are at, I just don't think, like, even for Jimmy Butler, I just think that they got to be like, yeah, because it's one of those where, all right, well, if Jimmy Butler hates it here and does not, like, it doesn't
that's
work,
the thing. Like, you only do that if you know you can keep him.
Yeah.
And I don't know that Jimmy Butler is giving anybody that kind of security or that kind of like vote of confidence.
Where are you on,
at this point?
Where are you on De'Aaron Fox?
I really like him. I think that you better not take him if you're one of these teams that has a shooting issue.
Yeah.
Like if you're like people are putting him in Sacramento already because they need a point guard, and I get it. but like they also need shooting. I'm just not sure.
I mean, healed.
And it's the same thing.
Healed's kind of that weapon, right?
I do like those two together. I think that there's some like Wall Beal light potential there.
Yeah.
But overall, as a team, they just need. Maybe it's fine. But I mean,
He's better with Phoenix, right? Like that's like a better fit. Is him with Booker? Even though like I'd have to look it up what the percentages are on Booker versus Hield. Like that's how bad Booker was for much of the year.
It's a weird year for Booker. Like his highs were really high.
Well, his high was 70 points, and yet it's like
yeah,
and he shot 36% from three, so that's good. Like that's better than I thought it was.
I mean, Hield was really good in terms of efficiency once he got there. But when he was with the Pelicans,
Hield shot 39%. Hield was still a better three-point shooter than Devin, and obviously yeah. fewer.
Well, what was his percentage after the trade? Like, it was, like, really great.
I don't want to open up my browser tab again. So, okay. I really like Jason Tatum. Tatum's kind of my dude.
I go back and forth on him. I really do. Like, I think some of the criticisms have been a little exaggerated. Like, I don't think he's, like, I think it's, like, really easy to pigeonhole him and be like, oh, he's, like, he's this type. He's, like, and you go and you say, like, Rudy Gay, you say Carmelo, you say Jabari Parker, and these are good players, but it ends up sounding like insults because you're basically saying, this guy can score a lot, but he won't be that efficient, and he won't pass, and he won't play defense.
Right.
And I'm not sure he's necessarily going to be a bad defender. I'm not sure that he just can't pass the ball. Like, I think he can be a well-rounded player, but my concerns are, does he need to have the ball in his hands to be effective, and will he be that great at scoring that he deserves to have the ball in his hands as much as a team would kind of need to give it to him, if that makes sense. Like, I'm not sure he is the number one option ever. And if he is, and if he's not, then what do you kind of do with him? So I think you can easily be suckered in by like how smooth he is and how much of a feel he has and all of that stuff. I kind of go back and forth. It's like, is this guy really going to be a star? And if he is, then cool. But I'm not sure if I'm there.
I think he's going to be a really useful weapon. I tend to, like, I think you're right that he could be a better defender than we think. He could be a better passer than we think. He could be all these things. The ceiling, I think, is pretty high because he's a smart player, you know? Like, I don't watch him and just be like,
ceiling's definitely high.
Like, I don't look at him and just be like, oh, like, he's just like a rock that's just, you know, he's a rock chunking other rocks. Like, I don't find that with him. His efficiency, like I looked on Synergy, and he had a 0.958 points per possession. Like Lonzo, this is amongst players that were minimum 100 possessions. Like Lonzo is at a 1.085, which is interesting because Lonzo, there's some questions with some folks about his shot. Like they're a little bit like, we don't know if this is going to be absolutely reliable. With Tatum, I feel like he's going to be a killer pick and pop weapon, and he looks like he's going to be able to expand a range. The other thing is that he's able to handle.
That's the question, right? Because his form's a little weird.
Yeah. He's able
and
to.
And his shot is consistent. Sometimes it looks good.
He's able to expand. Like, Tatum's able to expand and work on the pick and roll a little bit. Like, he can work as the ball handler, which I think is really interesting. I like him as a small ball four.
I think that's what he has to be.
He's really. Like, he's 6'7". I also think it's notable that his wingspan is the same as Blake Griffin, who's 2 inches taller. Like, he's this weird split between Blake and Tobias Harris. Like,
right.
Somewhere in the middle of those two on a style scale is kind of where Jason Tatum falls. The problem is, like, it may be just the Tobias Harris may be his ceiling. Like, that's possible, that Tobias Harris is the best that he's going to be. Like, Orlando Tobias Harris is, like, the best.
Here's my thing with Tatum is, like, It depends where you're putting him. Like, if you're putting him on Philadelphia, and if you're thinking optimistically about Philadelphia's future, let's say Jimmy Butler's not involved. Let's say Lowry's not involved. But let's be optimistic about what they have now. Let's say that Embiid and Simmons are going to be healthy and they're going to be stars, right? like Embiid is going to need the ball, whether it's out of pick and pops, pick and rolls, whether they're isolating him, whatever, he's going to get the ball a lot. Simmons is going to be, depending on who's playing point guard, either the primary or secondary creator on the perimeter. Like, where does Tatum fit in? Is he spacing the floor for those guys? I don't really think so. Is he a guy that's going to get a lot of opportunities to attack and create and run pick and roll? I don't know. And part of me is like, well, it's a new NBA. You can, like, however many playmakers you can have, like, the more the merrier, that's great, as long as they also know how to pass, as long as they also defend. And then it's like, well, how good is he as a passer and a defender?
Right.
Like, it's not like you're adding Andre Iguodala to the team. Like, this is a very different type of player. So I think if a team like that takes him, then you're making a bet that, like, not only just on his talent justifying it, but also that he'll be able to fit into what they're building. And I think given his style, it's not like a super snug fit, for what Philly has. I'm not going to say it just doesn't make any sense, but it's one that I'd certainly have concerns about. And especially given what we talked about, like, where Colangelo is now, like, this isn't about being good like 10 years from now. Like, they want to kind of speed this thing up. So I don't think you just take a gamble on the talent if you have like big questions about how it fits. I think fit does have to come into this a little bit now.
Fit does have to come into it. You know, and fit comes into everything, including when you're trying to find the best place to buy tickets, James.
Oh!
Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way, and that's with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. Just two taps, James! SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing like being in the building for your favorite concert or a game. This is going to be an awesome concert season. I think there's just a lot of shows out there that are going to be worth going to. I live in Colorado, and I recently used SeatGeek to get some tickets for this great outdoor venue in Colorado. I'm really excited about going. It's going to be just awesome, and you can do it all on your phone. I've done it while I've been like hanging out in the airport looking for those tickets. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Guarantees? That does not come with a draft. This is why SeatGeek is better than the NBA draft. There are no guarantees in the NBA draft. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, our listeners, James, they get $20 back on their first SeatGeek purchase. All you gotta do is just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code EYE, like the CBS logo. That's promo code I for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That's right. We're doing
very
live.
Very simple. Very easy.
We're doing live reads now. I'm feeling good. I'm in my zone. I talked to my podcast Zen master, who I learned from, and I've adapted.
Phil Jackson?
Can you imagine if Phil Jackson had a podcast? Can you imagine?
I would listen to every single one. It would be so great.
This is the Triangle Podcast from my woodshed in Montana where I smoke opium. All right.
The Peyote Pod.
The Peyote Pod. That's our new name of our podcast. No, that's probably not a good thing for CBS. All right, so you and I are both very high on Jonathan Isaac.
Yes.
What's the best place for him to go? Where's like the best place for him to go? We're going to talk about him, and then we're going to jump over to free agency.
I mean, I really love the idea of him in Philly because just how versatile they'll be defensively would be amazing. Like, just to have him and
no one scores on them ever again.
Yeah, it would be crazy. Like, they'd have rim protection, but also, like, those guys can switch out. I mean, Embiid, you don't want guarding, like, tiny point guards all the time, but you saw it happen a few times in the regular season. He would hold his own. But I'm thinking more about switching 1 through 4, and just what a terror that could be for other teams. Like, offensively, I think he has a lot of potential too, but I'm thinking more like, if you want to build a great defensive team in Philadelphia, like, you go get Jonathan Isaac.
You say switching everything, and I'm like, oh my God, James is just trying to build like Warriors teams all across the land. That's like all James is trying to do.
That's what every team is trying to do.
Build 30, only like in Philadelphia. It's like, what if the Warriors couldn't shoot at all? Like, what does that look like when the Warriors can't shoot at all?
I do think there was a piece on The Ringer, like, maybe a month ago, I don't know, by Jonathan Charks, who's basically arguing that Isaac will eventually be a center in the NBA. And I think some people look at that and say, wait, he's like, isn't he like more like a small forward than a center? Like, he's sort of a power forward. But I do think down the line, like, he's going to put on some weight, and he's definitely tall enough and has the wingspan for it. Like, I think he could be a guy that if you start, you could kind of start him, as a small forward with Simmons and Embiid, and then he could be your backup center, which is so weird, but that's kind of the way the league is going.
If he can play center, that makes me think of him and Towns.
Yeah. Ooh. I mean, Ooh. I would love that too. Like, I think whoever the Wolves draft there, it should be about getting Towns a different front court partner and moving Jeng to the bench, you know, even if it doesn't happen right away. But I think if they go with Markkanen, if they go with Isaac, even if Tatum winds up slipping to them, which I don't think is going to happen, but let's say it could. I think that's what you're looking for there. That's what I would be looking for.
I just want to say right now that Malik Monk being drafted by the New York Knicks is written in the stars. Like, this is just like, this has to happen. There's no other scenario that makes as much sense as this.
I think Frank is your triangle point guard there, though. I'm not even going to try to say his last name. I'm just calling him Frankie.
Wait, hang on. I learned it. It's
Ntilikina?
I think it's Ntilikina, isn't it? It's Ntilikina. I looked it up.
I said I wasn't going to try to say
it's
it.
It's Ntilikina. It's Ntilikina is how I read it. Maybe the pronunciation guide is wrong. I apologize. By the way, just so everyone knows, like, I don't watch college basketball as much as I should. Like, I try to get to it this year, but when I do watch, I go back and I watch through a service that we have, and so I watch it with the sound off, and so I don't know how to pronounce any of these guys' names, and that often creates problems. And, like, we should know how to pronounce them. Like, it's a thing, but...
We'll be better by the end. Last year I mispronounced Malachi Richardson and I was really embarrassed about it. It's fine. We all do it.
Yeah, well, we'll get it figured out in the next 7 days, which is like when the NBA draft, or like two, it's 2 weeks. 2 weeks for the NBA draft, which is crazy. All right, let's jump over to free agency. And I wrote a thing this week on a handful of guys that have options and have either opted out or opted in or whatever. Wade's expected to opt in, which I'm bummed about. I get why. To me, that's a real sign with Wade that he is at that point in his career where he's like, I don't know if I can get another contract. Like, I don't know if I can get the money. I'm hoping...
I think he's also, like, he moved his whole family to Chicago, too. Like, that, I think that's part of it.
Yeah, and I get that matters. Chicago.
Like, after 13 years in one place, you move home. I think that's, like, a life decision.
Yeah, Chicago's only an hour away from Cleveland, and so... I just really want LeBron, after this series is over, to call up Dwayne and be like, look, man, I need help. And for Dwayne to be like, I'm on my way, my friend. You call, and I shall answer. And then
I'll Venmo you a few million, buddy.
And then Wade does not make any sort of impact because he's too old and can't shoot threes, and it doesn't actually help. That's like my worst scenario, is that LeBron finds a way to actually unite the banana boat crew in Cleveland, and they're just too far past their prime, and they get beat anyway, and it's like the Rockets in 96 with Drexler and Barkley and Akeem. Like, that's really my worst case scenario. I'm like, I don't want to see these guys who, like, I was in college when they were kind of coming in and loved watching them as young guys. I don't want to see them just, like, outclassed because they're too old. That's, like, a real bummer future for me to kind of consider.
It could happen, too.
It could definitely happen.
I don't think Kevin Love for Carmelo Anthony could happen, but, like, there are, like, versions of this that could happen.
The report early this morning that – or not even a report. It was a quote with Luke Walton saying that the Warriors' dominance alters the Lakers' approach towards landing superstars. That's not a good thing for the league. There is no way to spin that as good. You don't want teams just basically be like, look, there's just no point in trying. You don't want that. Especially you don't want it from the Los Angeles Lakers.
Well, I think there's a difference between, like, there's no point in trying and, like – okay, we're looking at 2019 instead of 2017, or we're looking at 2020 instead of 2018, when they're like, this is when we want our players to be in their primes. Like, I think that's how most of the league is thinking. Like, Lakers or not, I think we should be praising the Lakers for thinking more like a normal team instead of the Lakers exceptionalism that we've been upset about for so much.
You know, you sound like the anchor in The Simpsons when he's like, I for one welcome our new alien overlords.
Yeah. The Warriors are our alien overlords. You gotta be smart. The Lakers trying to compete in the next two seasons, like, is going to be fruitless anyway. Look at their roster. Look at where they are. Even if they sign one free agent. Like, they would have to sign multiple guys, multiple stars. That's the world we live in now. So I think it behooves them, just as it behooves most of the league, to take a longer view and try to develop stars. And then once those guys are developing, hopefully still on their rookie contracts or second contracts, you can add guys in free agency too.
The year is 2018. 29 NBA teams are tanking. Everyone is like superstars. Like, what if like no one signs Gordon Hayward this summer? Like, no, sorry.
The Jazz are just like, later, man, nah.
Like no one signs Danilo Gallinari. No one signs Chris Paul. Like, everyone's just like, look, there's just no point, so we're not going to try.
I mean, I think when you start talking about guys like Gallinari, that actually does become interesting. Because it's like, for a guy like him, if you're a rebuilding team, you don't want him.
Yeah.
Right? And if you're a contender, like, how much money do you actually have to give somebody like that? I'm not concerned trolling Danilo Gallinari. I think he'll get a contract that's fine. But I think those guys, those in-between guys, are in like a really weird position this summer.
James, the CBS Sports Basketball podcast in which James Herbert advocates for everyone to just stop trying.
That's one way to put it. Not exactly what I said.
It's just, like, this is the most funny situation. I mean, like LeBron just retires. Oh, God. Can you imagine if LeBron just retired after the series?
Goes to play football?
I was like, I'm just out. I'm done.
You really, like, we could be, this could be airing after, actually, no, because we're putting it up today, so I shouldn't say that.
Yeah, but people, like, are going to listen to it tomorrow.
It could be 2-1. The Cavs could win by 30.
I just decided, like, because I knew I was going to get radio questions about it. Like, the radio questions have all been like, is there any chance? And so I had to make a call. I had to make a decision in my approach to either be like, look, are you going to lie and say that you think this can happen? Or are you going to be honest? And so I've been honest. Been like, look, if the Cavs win game 3 or game 4, I'm not going to be surprised. I'm not going to be surprised. It will not shock me because I understand basketball to some degree, at least. Hopefully at this point, considering how much time I put into it. But I didn't think they were going to win game 5 last year. I didn't think they were going to win game 6. I didn't think they were going to win game 7. I don't think that they were, I didn't think they were going to win game 1. I didn't think they were going to win game 2. I don't think they're going to win game 3. And I don't think they're going to win game 4. I have to be intellectually honest, because otherwise all I'm telling you is something in order to try and represent a version of, like, competitiveness in the interest of drama. And, like, that doesn't feel honest to me. Like, I have to be honest.
Well, yeah, with the finals, we're all in this weird position, and we've alluded to this, is like, if we're actually just thinking from an analyst perspective, based on what we have seen in these two games and what we've seen from them over the course of the season and how the rosters are made up, there's no compelling basketball reason for the Cavs to win. Like, going into any specific game against the Warriors, there's no reason to be like, yeah, this is an advantage that they have that they should be able to exploit. Like, I don't think there's anything there. Does that mean the Warriors are going to sweep them and it's going to be easy? No, because basketball is complicated and stuff can happen and the Cavs could make more shots. But it's really difficult to look at this in terms of the talent advantage and the system that the Warriors have and the defense that they're playing and be like, yeah, I expect the Cavs to win this particular game.
So,
like, it could happen.
You asked, but you like this Jazz team a lot this year. You picked them to win like 140.
Love the Jazz.
Yeah, you picked them to win like 140 games, and
yeah, I'm still surprised they didn't win 140.
And you really like this team. So, given our just previous discussion on this, if you were them, would you go deep into the luxury tax to retain Gordon Hayward and George Hill?
Yes, because you still have a team that is growing together. You have a team that is really good right now. Like, I don't. When we're talking about teams should be looking to the future, I'm thinking more teams that are winners of like 20, 30, 40 games. And I think the Jazz, like the healthy Jazz, which we never saw the healthy Jazz, but the healthy Jazz are closer to a 60-win team than a 40-win team to me. So you build on that, and you hope there's more internal development, and
you go for that. You go for that one special year. You go for that one year when, like, you know, an injury occurs or a suspension or something, and like things get wacky, and you just happen to, by some miracle, something happens and everything works out perfectly. You take that shot. You're still advocating for teams, if they have a real shot, taking a shot. You're just not advocating for the Lakers to be like, let's try and get in this thing. You're like, no, you have no reasonable shot. You should stay out of it. For the teams that have what you feel are a reasonable shot, they should stay in it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can look at the Bulls and say, blow that thing up.
Right.
Or the Pacers, blow that thing up. But I don't see any reason to do that if you're the Jazz, who have been patiently building this thing for a long time. And I think legitimately have a really, really good team. And nobody really talks about them as like fringe contenders because nobody had seen them win a playoff series until this year. But if you look at the formula that they have and the stats that they had, like they were in that group with the Spurs, with the Clippers, like honestly with the regular season Cavs, not the playoff Cavs. But if you look at their regular season performance, they were up there despite the fact they had a million injuries again. So I think there are tough questions they're going to have to answer. We talked about that when they got eliminated. Like the favors thing is a big deal because he has one more year in his contract and you don't necessarily want to pay him the money that he's going to get. And you also definitely don't want to lose him for nothing. So like that part's interesting. Exum being a former number three pick, his development is interesting. And I think there's no guarantee this team ever makes the finals in a world where the Warriors exist. But I don't think there's a reason for a team like that to stop trying to be competitive. And their goalposts could shift depending on what happens with Hill and Hayward. But I don't think it gets to a point where they're like, oh yeah, we're just going to give up and start over. We're going to trade Gobert. We're going to like basically turn back the clock to when they dumped Darren Williams and said we're rebuilding. Like, no, like the point of that rebuild was to get to somewhere like where they are now and build on that.
I have to get by a washer and dryer this weekend.
That sounds fun.
It's not. It's the first time I've had to buy this kind of like a major appliance. And I'm not looking forward to the process. This is not a plug, by the way. There's no advertisement coming here. I just literally do have to buy a washer and dryer, and I've like been researching for 5 days now, and I'm still just, I don't know. It's just, I do not know the difference in all these things, because my wife's like, well, just buy something with like high efficiency. And I was like, that's not descriptive. And my wife's also, the other problem is my wife is really cost conscious. She's just one of those people that's really cost conscious, and that's a good thing for us, because otherwise we'd be penniless, because I'm a moron with money. Don't hire me to be your GM, by the way. Not a good idea. So... So I'm trying to like skip these things out, and so I'm trying to be very conscious of like what's like a reasonable amount, and what can I basically come to the wife with that she's not going to make faces and yell and throw things about how much it costs. So it's just been a big long process. Have you ever had to buy like a big appliance?
No, but I just sent you a link to the Sweet Home, which generally, if I'm looking to buy something,
again,
I have not had to buy. No, but generally that's where I'll go because they do like detailed reviews of this stuff. Nice. So I think there's help out there for you.
Nice. Hopefully I will find it. And yeah, so I'm here in Cleveland. I cover game 3 tonight. There's an off day tomorrow. I cover game 4 in Cleveland on Friday. Saturday I fly home. I pack that night. I pack all day Sunday. We move Monday and Tuesday. If by some miracle there's a game 6, I return to Cleveland for game 6. Kind of crazy.
You have a lot going on right now.
I have a lot going on in my life right now. That is very...
How are we even going to find time for podcasts, Matt?
Well, we're going to have to, because we have sponsors, and I have to make sure these things get posted, so that's going to happen. All right, that's going to wrap it up with the CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. Guys, you guys have been really positive the last couple of shows. You guys have said a lot of really good things to us on Twitter, and I really appreciate it. I like that it seems like the show is improving, and that's good. this has been a learning experience for me this year about how to do this and how to do it well. I appreciate you being patient with us on audio issues. I appreciate you being patient with us on how many times I say like, which I noticed I did a lot in this episode. I appreciate you guys
paying attention. Oh, man, I do that too.
With inconsistencies all over. So I just wanted to say I appreciate you guys listening to us. We appreciate your listenership, and we'll have great stuff coming forward on the draft and everything else once the NBA season is over. You know, whenever that is. Could be weeks from now and not Saturday. That's definitely possible.
Is it bad that when I interviewed Richard Jefferson about podcasting, he said he was listening to his episodes and trying to cut down on saying and like, and that just made me feel self-conscious about my vocal performance?
Yeah, the problem. We need training. You and I should really get some training. All right, that's going to do it. Thanks, James.
Thank you, Matt.